This RRFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Aotearoa Pathways to Art. And it is me, Becky, your host. If you have not listened before, I work in the exhibition team at Aotearoa in Masterton. And I have a fabulous guest with me joining me on Zoom. I know, that ancient COVID-inspired technology, which you'd all probably forgotten about, is the lovely Hannah Bremner. Hello, Hannah. Can you hear me over the wavelength?
I can. Yes.
All right. Now, Hannah, you've got a new exhibition coming up. But before we talk about all the amazing things that's in it, do you want to tell us who you are and the title of your show and a vague summary about your show? So who are you first?
Sure. Kia ora, ko Hana Ahau, ko Ngāti Rongomai Wahine, ko Ngāti Kahingunu, te ko Ngāti Pākehā, te iwi. My name is Hannah and I am an artist, but I'm also a person who's worked for a long time in what we call the GLAM sector, so that's galleries, libraries, archives and museums. The reason why I'm telling you about that is because the work that I make is quite strongly linked to the work that I do in my daily life as well. I live in Paikakariki in Wellington.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that my colleague Jo, when she first saw the word glam, she's like, what does this mean? You're like, it feels so obvious, but yeah, but what does it actually mean? So glam, galleries, museums, archives, and what was the last one?
So museums. Galleries, libraries, archives, museums, and some people put an I on the end for information, and some people put an I and an M on the end for iwi and marae as well.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a really interesting place to work in. Yeah.
Fantastic. So yeah. What is your day job at the moment?
My day job at the moment is working at Te Rua Mahara o Te Kawanatanga, that's Archives New Zealand, and we are a joint organisation with Te Puna Matauranga, that's the National Library, and my current role is actually working hands-on with archives for a project called Kia Rite, which is get ready. So getting ready, what that means for us is moving the over 9 million archives that we hold at Te Rua from our old building, which has sort of expired its use, into our new building, which is across the road, our beautiful new building that's been built. And we're quite close to getting that mahi completed in December this year. So, yeah, go.
That's a busy full-time job. That's a busy job. Plus being an artist as well. So the word archive, I think, is probably important there, isn't it? You do obviously work with archives and your exhibition is called the Imaginary Archives. What's it all about?
Yeah, so the concept of this exhibition being an imaginary archive really comes from the fact that the work that's exhibited in this show is a overview of things that I've made over the last 20, 25 years, and they're to be seen as a whole. So they are an archive. They are a collection that has that are all interrelated. So all of the objects that I've made and the images that I've made for this exhibition are to be seen as one kind of living organism. They all have these little relationships between each other, which is something that is quite unique to an archival collection. So archival collections often, in fact, we don't use the word collection very often. We use the word holdings, slightly different practices, but that doesn't really matter. So that's one of the differences between museums and archives, is that archives are generally, people think about archives as being paper-based, so like records, you know, paper-based records, but actually an archive can be a multitude of different things. It's not necessarily just record-based, but those relationships are the most important things, is that they're not individual things. They are things that have an interrelated connection to each other.
Amazing. So when you first started this 20, 25 years ago, did you have this idea back then, or has it just kind of grown organically?
It has grown organically, but there's always been a foundation of an interest in collecting and accumulating and the relationships between objects and things. There's another layer to this, so I'll just talk a little bit about it. So if I was to sort of talk about the overall concept of my making, the thing that I'm really interested in is transforming things that come from the everyday environment that we live in. So say, for example, something like a pair of scissors or something like a shaver that you use to shave your legs or something like an axe that you use to cut wood with. You know, I mean, in your everyday life, that's just something that you look at, you use it, it has a purpose, it has a utilitarian purpose. But then you see those things in another space, say, for example, in a museum. And they lose that meaning and they gain another meaning. And another layer that I put upon that is that I like to transform things. It's kind of like a visually transform things so that they have a resemblance of what they used to be, but then they become something quite new and different. So if you come to the show, you'll see some interesting things. Like you will probably see a good example would be the scissors. So I've got these beautiful scissors that have been cast in glass. They are not functional, and they've had lots of little holes laboriously drilled into the sides of them, and then they have feathers, so they now have the sort of animalistic quality to them, and almost like a ritualistic quality to them, which is something that happens within a museum environment as well. So yeah, it's all about that transformation. Some people use the word transmogrification. That's a fancy pants word, but yeah. So those are the things that interest me. But then in the making space, but then there is the bigger, broader view of, well, what are these things collectively as a group, and what changes when you display these things collectively as a group in a space like a museum, or potentially somewhere else, like maybe in a public garden, or which I actually have done before. I've actually done exhibitions where I've dug holes in the ground and I've made sort of a reverse archaeology sort of environment. But the space that you display things in does change the way that you interact with it.
Absolutely. Going back to your glass, when did you first start exploring glass as an art medium? Was it something you've always been interested in, or?
Yeah, that's quite a fun question, actually, because my father was the local glazier for handy. So I've always been around glass, but he was, as a glazier, he was doing things like, you know, repairing old china cabinets and things like that. So flat glass, I've always been comfortable with the material, but I originally actually went to art school to become an illustrator because drawing and printmaking is actually my background.
Okay.
And so I went to art school in Whanganui in the 1990s when glass was really quite a new thing in New Zealand in terms of it being associated with contemporary art. Of course, we've got a really rich, beautiful history of studio glass and glass art in Aotearoa with amazing people like Anne Robinson and Emma Camden and amazing people like that who have got a huge tradition of, you know, really pushing the boundaries of how people perceive glass as an art form. So yeah, lots of respect for those people. But yeah, so that what actually got me into glass was, and I've told the story before, it's a little bit naughty, was when I was at art school.
No swearing.
not naughty, but it was a little bit naughty. I was studying and I was, printmaking was my major because I love printmaking and I still make prints. But I found out that the glass kids were going to be going to Japan on an amazing trip to Japan. And so I decided to change my major to glass because I was like, yeah, man, I want to go on that trip. And I went, and it was a life-changing experience.
Wow.
A whole group of us went to a place called Seto in Japan, and we went to a glass art conference, and we met a whole lot of amazing international glass artists, including Dal Chihuly and people like that. And it just gave us all, most of the people on that trip, you know, it really gave them the bug, and a lot of them are still making art, glass art today. People like Katie Brown and Lindsay Patterson, who sadly passed away not so long ago. But yeah, lots of, yeah, lots of cool, that's really what got me into glass, and using glass as my sort of main sculptural medium. Yeah.
What a great story. I love that you're like, ooh, I really quite like to go to Japan. Thank you very much.
Basically,
I'm just going to change my major. Yeah, I love glass. Really love it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I love it so much.
I love it so much. I have to go on this trip. Hey, Hannah, now we don't have a huge amount of time because we're on Zoom and it only gives us a finite amount of time. So shall we have your first piece of music before we delve a little bit deeper into your exhibition afterwards? What do you want to play first?
I'd like to play Patti Smith.
Okay, yeah. Tell me a little bit about why you've chosen this song.
So I've chosen Patti Smith, and the song is People Have the Power. And I think people can probably figure out why I've chosen this song at this time of year. Essentially, it is because of the message, which is, you know, that we have the collective power to make change if we want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically the message is vote, people. You know, make sure that you vote in November. And in particular, people who are disadvantaged by the current environment that we're living within.
Well,
so yeah, that's my message.
Now, I think, Hannah, you're not going to be able to listen to this. So you'll just have to pretend that you're listening to this.
But I will.
I'll talk to you back in a few minutes. Fun. Here we go. What's the title of it? People Have the Power. Here we go. Patti Smith. Okay. Off we go.
Dreaming of an aspect bright and fair, but in my sleeping it was broken. But my dream it lingered near in the farm.
Thank you, Hannah.
It was there. Sorry about that.
Oh, it's all good. That was a really good song. And I particularly enjoyed that there was some lovely artwork showing during the video as well. So good choice. Well done. Right, I'm just trying to get you back in. How do I do that? There we go. Oh, it's been a while since I've used Zoom. It's all a little bit
fast. Yeah, that's a bit funny, isn't it?
There we go. You're back. So we've talked a little bit about the idea of imaginary archives, and you want to see it as a whole. But in the exhibition, you've kind of got a very particular space called your black room, haven't you, that you have got. Tell us a little bit about what is this black room? What does it kind of symbolise and what have you got in it?
Sure. So, you know, back to the overall concept, there's sort of three aspects to what's happening here. So there's my own private collection of my imaginary archive, right? And then there's another layer. There's sort of multiple layers. So there's this my private stuff. Then there's working within a space like a public art gallery, and then having this play between public, private, formal, secret, those sorts of things. So when you go into the space, you'll see there's as you usually would, walk into a big white gallery. There's this lovely white gallery space. Everything's looking lovely and very uniform and very, you know, organized. And then in the middle of the room, you'll find a black box. A little black box room, and the little black box room has a curtain. So you can't see inside until you sort of peep through the curtain into the room. And so inside that black curtain, you will see something that's sort of a little bit of it's a lot of a hint towards the traditional Wunderkammer rooms. So the curiosity cabinets, were around before museums really came to be, public museums came to be. And so it's sort of this idea of you're going into a little private room, a little secret room that other people can't go into. And when you're in that room, it's meant to be quite an intimate sort of experience. You're really close up. It's quite a small space. You're snuggled in tight. And in that space, you will see sort of things that you might just will evoke a sense of curiosity or sensuality. So say, for example, there's a whole wall of very delicately sewn, hand-sewn velvet bones. And they're quite sculptural. They're pinned directly to the wall. They're sort of coming out at you. You kind of want to touch them. They're nice and soft and luxurious and lovely and beautiful. And then next to them, you'll see some things that are put into domes, and they kind of look like weird specimen-y type things and kind of strange things that might seem a little bit familiar, like, for example, the shaver. Or you might see things like a pair of lips with lots of feathers on it, so it might look a little bit like a keepsake or something like that, or something strange and ritualistic. And then you'll see some things that are actually inside the black box. There are more black boxes, so you've got like a deep framed objects inside these deep frames. I won't tell you everything about what's inside them because
we want some secrets
for us. Yeah. There are also things like there's a beautiful light box inside there which has all sorts of glowing, alluring things. Yeah, so it's just really there to evoke a sense of curiosity and play. Some of it's actually quite silly. It's intentionally silly. I don't believe that art should be inaccessible to people. So whatever anybody thinks when they go into that space is perfectly fine. And, in fact, I think it's a really good space for kids to go and imagine and kind of look at unusual things and have a little bit of a little secret space. Mm. Yeah.
My boys went in there in the opening and they're like, ooh, what's this? Ooh, what's this? And literally they couldn't work out where to look. So there's so many things. Yeah. And they found the Buzzy Bee crocodile. Tell us about
Yes, people love the Buzzy Bee.
Tell us, how did you monster mash this Buzzy Bee crocodile together? Where did that come from?
Well, the monster mash of the Buzzy Bee crocodile is quite interesting because it's an object that's been floating around in my life for quite a while and it's had many different iterations. So its most recent iteration is the Buzzy Bee crocodile sculpture. So the head of the crocodile and the skin of the crocodile is real. And
okay,
it has been.
It has been.
I've created a sculpture so that it is now in the shape of a buzzy bee. But it has been many things over the years. In fact, it's even been involved in a little bit of performance art with one of my friends, Siren Deluxe, but we won't talk about that.
Oh, no,
in this
you've got to just.
It's had multiple lives, and it may continue to have multiple lives.
That's amazing.
Ongoing. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. What an imagination you must have to go, I know, I'm going to put a buzzy bee and a crocodile together and see what happens. I love it. I love it. Yeah. Especially, yeah. You know, with your scissors and your feathers. Where do these ideas come from? Where do you kind of go, yeah, glass feathers, glass scissors, feathers, winner.
Yeah.
Where does this combination come from?
Well, I mean, it does come back to that original concept of taking things that are normal every day. Like, say, for example, most children in New Zealand played with a buzzy bee when they were a child, but they probably never saw a crocodile. You know, so there's this exoticism kind of thing going on there with that. It's not completely a contrary thing that happens. Like there is an element of going back to my initial concept of things that are everyday and then transforming them into things that are curious and unusual.
It's kind of
and then linking them back to this overall concept of, you know, the history of museology really is where it does link back to collecting and collections and what is it that makes humans so interested in having all of these and looking at things in this way. And it's a good question to have because things do need to change. And I will just acknowledge that, I mean, it is an environment that is extraordinarily Eurocentric. I didn't dive into anything in this piece that relates to, you know, breaking down those ways of operating or glorifying those ways of operating because, you know, there's a lot of change that needs to happen and that is happening in the institutions that we work with. But, you know, long may that change continue.
Talking of collections, and I understand that, you know, there's a desire, isn't there, to have things that are yours. Did you ever have a collection when you were a small child? Any rubbers or key rings?
Don't traumatise me. I did. I had an amazing, I was very, very lucky as a child to grow up rurally. And I grew up on a farm where I had native bush behind my house. And we had many rural children will relate to this, but we had an old dump that had objects in it from like the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Wow.
And so every time it would rain, a whole new layer of treasures would be
revealed,
exposed. So that keeps the kids busy for quite a long time. But yes, and I've always had a history of collecting, and I'll just make it clear, not hoarding, collecting and an interest in objects and things and the stories that they have to tell.
What do you collect now that isn't to do with your artwork? Do you have any kind of collections on the go?
I actually am being extraordinarily
frugal,
disciplined. Plants would be what I am the worst at collecting at the moment. Yeah,
because you've actually used some of the Adatoy collection, haven't you, in your exhibition? How did you work out what to use?
Yes. So this comes back to how I was talking about there's many layers to the exhibition. So there's the layer of Hannah's private collection of stuff that she's made over the last 20 years. And then there's this extra layer of me thinking about, well, what is it about museums that is interesting to me, this public-private space? And then having this opportunity to engage with Aratoi and having the privilege, because it is a huge privilege, to be able to engage with the collections that you hold and care for on behalf of the public. And so that actually came about from this idea of looking at museology, looking at why is it that things are public-private, how do things actually come into our care, and then what do we do with those things once they are in our care. One of the things I was doing was working with the behind the scenes in the collections and looking at the objects, predominantly natural history collections and history collections, and thinking about, well, what kinds of relationships already exist just visually with what I have already made? And then also thinking, oh, could I make things that then have a visual connection to those objects? And one of the things that people will notice when they come into the exhibition, which might annoy them a little bit, but it's kind of intentional, is that there's no interpretation for any of the stuff in the exhibition, including my own work. So the entire exhibition, including the things that have been exhibited from Aratoi, don't have any interpretation because we're allowing people to come in and have their own view of what these items are. And there is information about what the collection items are in terms of titles, and I'm sure that the Aratoi staff will be very happy to, you know, if people are really curious and they want to know, I'm sure that they could find out a little bit. Most of it's available online anyway. Yeah, so there's that element of the work, which is really cool. But there's another extra special part.
Hannah. You're like an onion.
That's intentional. There's another extra layer, which is about sort of breaking down that access and, you know, thinking about how public spaces operate and our role in these environments, is that we will be offering a workshop.
Tell us the
We're going to talk about that.
Well, we can, but tell us about your workshop. We'll go for it now.
So, I mean, I will talk about the workshop because it is a very integral part of the exhibition. Dates are not set yet. I'll just be clear about that. We have some pending. But I will be offering my time and expertise to do a workshop with people to talk about how to care for your family collections and taonga, and more to find out about that later on, and we'll send some information out.
If you do want to find out more, head to Aratoi's website. It'll be on the events page, and it'll also be on MailChimp and all that, socials and all that kind of thing, so just keep an eye out and you'll find it. Hannah, now unfortunately Zoom has gone ping at me and said I've only got 8 minutes left. So let's do your next music and then we'll wrap up quickly afterwards. So what's your next piece of music you want to share with us?
So the next piece of music is a waiata by Herene Melbourne, who is Ngāti Tūhoe, Ngāti Kahungunu. He sadly passed away in 2003, I think it was. But this waiata is sung by Marlon Williams. It's called Rongo Mai. And would you like me to talk about what it's about now?
Yes.
Sure. So it's a waiata that's about the cosmos. And it's... Herene talks about, in this waiata, about his desire to fly on the wings of a comet called Ahuahi Tūroa. And the song is really about peace, connection, and tranquility. So I think that's a nice way to finish the interview.
All right. Well, it's only about 3 minutes long, so we'll have a few minutes to chat afterwards, Hannah. So see you on the other side.
Cool.
Roki nei e te whanau marama i te rangi e kia rere noa i ngā parihau o rongo mai rere takiwa Huri ae, ami o rangi. Tira marama nei e, te auahi tūroa I te rangi e. Kia rere noa au I tōna puhihi Une toroa Kia mihi noa au Ki te hunga Whetūrangi mai te marino I te rangi e kia rere noa I te raukura o rongo mai huri matau ki te hono Kiteromo Kitehono Iteromo
Thank you, Hannah. That was a fabulous a piece of music. I really enjoyed that, actually. It was lovely to have a very different piece of music, very different from Patti Smith. So thank you for that. We've only got, as I've got a countdown on my screen, which is terrifying. We've only got about a few minutes left. So, Hannah, what I did want to ask you, I've got a whole list of questions I wanted to ask you, and I've only done about three, but it's been so lovely to talk to you. I wanted to ask you before we go, what do you want people to take away from your exhibition? What do you want people to kind of leave the door and go, that was a something exhibition, I've learned something? What do you want people to take away?
I would like people to feel welcome, and I would really love it if people who wouldn't normally come to museums or art galleries to come along and check out some of the artwork. It's not meant to be... Art galleries shouldn't be scary, and they shouldn't be places that where people don't feel welcome. I'd like people to just, you know, feel comfortable to experience the work however they feel is right for them, and not feel like they need to have things interpreted at them. I'd say it's a relatively formal, it might look like a little bit of a scary space for some people, but go in the black room and have a good time. Yeah,
absolutely. Your public program is coming out soon. Is there anything else you'd like to tell anybody about your fabulous exhibition? Don't tell me when it's on. How long is it on for?
Sure, the exhibition is running now. It's running until the 1st of November. But I'd also just like to take a little very quick amount of time just to acknowledge the passing of Yayoi Kusama, and to point out that the waiata that I chose now in retrospect, not knowing at the time, is really appropriate for her, because she also, through her work, was a person who really promoted peace, unity and tranquility through her work as well. She will be missed. Moi mai rā.
I saw that she had died yesterday, and it was very sad. Yeah, she was an incredible artist, an incredible woman. Really interesting to kind of read her backstory, her kind of history, and how she got where she was. So, yeah, thank you, Helen. That's a good reminder. Thank you. Thank you so much, Helen. I think we've got about 30 seconds left, so I will say goodbye to you now before I get kicked off. But it was really lovely to talk to you. Thank you for spending some time with me this afternoon, and for working out this technological fun time that has given me a little bit of a go back to COVID times, which I'm not sure is a great thing I wanted to remember. But hopefully I will see you soon back in the gallery. And hopefully it's all good. Thank you so much, Hannah. And I'll see you at your public program.
Yay. Okay.
Thank you so much,
Hannah.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Oh, there we go. That was Hannah Bremner. She was talking to me today. So I know it's a little bit of a shorter show than normal, but I just wanted to remind people what is on at Anatoy at the moment and what's coming up. So we do have Hannah Bremner with the Imaginary Archives of what we've just heard about in the main gallery until the 1st of November. She's sharing the space with a Carterton local artist called Angela Singer, who has made an installation called Overmorrow. Lots of taxidermy, some interesting ideas on, again, natural history in museums. That's a really, there are lovely exhibitions to join together, actually. We've also got in the Forsyth Bar Windows Gallery another Carterton local, Simon Ray, who's an animator. His work is a lot about the commute to Wellington via the Wairarapa on the train. He's been looking out of the window as the landscape whooshes by and creating an animation of that, but also taking sneaky observational drawings of the commuters in the train as well. So that's a really lovely show. That's on until the 15th of November. We do have an exhibition called Patented Inventions That Change the World, which you may have heard of as we talked to Mark Pacey a couple of months ago on this show. That's all about inventions, and that is going until December, so plenty of time to see that. Please come and vote for your favourite invention that you think has changed the world the most. And coming up in the Wesley wing, we've got our fan favourite Breadcraft Wideupper Schools Art Exhibition. That's coming up on the 26th of September to the 18th of October. Again, we've got a huge amount of schools involved this year. It's been getting bigger and bigger every single year. We have about 24 schools involved this time with over 600 pieces of work, 3D sculptures, photographs, all sorts. That's a really lovely one to come and have a look at as well, especially if your child or student is actually in the show, which is probably pretty fabulous. So lots on at Adatoy at the moment. Please come and see us. We do appreciate you coming and having a look. And if you do want to kind of have another look at Hannah's work, there's plenty of information online. I'll put some things on social media as well about her photos that I couldn't quite get to work today. But I will see you next time, and hopefully I'll be talking to Simon Ray himself. Cross fingers if I can get him on, get him in the studio. That's it from me this month, and I will see you all next time. Bye-bye.